Hi there, I'm Melissa Nielsen. Today our topic is teenagers. So I would like for you to pause this video and go get your headphones. This is not a video for you to consume while you're with your little ones. It is a video even though it's short, we're going to dive into some pretty serious topics, and I don't want you to have little ears around because some of this is sensitive information. So go grab those headphones and then push play again. Okay, now that you have your headphones, I thought we would start with just talking about teenager land, and there's some amazing blessings, and it's such a fun time, but such a different time for us as moms. So I have 5 children. 4 have been teenagers, and 3 are adults, and Super Sam, who you might know from our Super Sam stories, is 13. So he's just diving in. He's almost 14. Teenagers are fun, but my goodness, it's busy in a very different way. And I'm not talking about the fact that you're running kids from the mall, maybe to over here, to the friend's house, the social. It's busy in a very emotionally taxing way. When they were small, you were busy in a physically taxing way where you were chasing after them. But now you're sort of in this space where they have all these emotions and they're really trying to figure them out. And with that, you have to help them because you're their roadmap. You've got to be there to help. So one thing that I do recommend highly is that all of the things that I'm going to talk about today, and hopefully you and your partner have taken the time to discuss how you will approach each subject and what you believe as a family, what your values are as a family. Every family will be different. What your values are as a family and how you will approach those things then as they come up. When you've already had those conversations with your partner, it allows you to have sort of a united front when you have to talk about these things with your kids. I also would highly recommend you have the conversations we're going to talk about today before they come to you. So you want to have these conversations before they're at your doorstep, because 9 times out of 10, we're about 3 seconds behind. And what happens is they've encountered it, and then we're like, oh crap, how do I reel that back in? So we want to be able to sort of front load everything, you know. Talk about front loading a lot with younger kids. This is how we're front loading with the older kids. So I do want to say that keys to success in the teenage years aren't always you knocking it out of the park. I think if you get a child to 18 and they're alive and they're emotionally whole, for the most part at least, you've not been too damaged, then it's a success in my book. I think that the teenager years are really hard. I think that today's teens have far more struggles ahead of them than we ever did. And even parents that are, Eric and I are in our late 40s, even parents that are in their late 30s, you didn't have the same things going on in your life as a teenager that they do now. And I find it scary as a parent. I also find it a challenging place to be able to really take the time to connect with my teens on these topics as they're starting to sort of figure out their own answers. So I want to say that sort of this journey with teenagers starts when they're little. So if you're watching this now and you don't have teens yet, I want you to hear me. There are a few things that I think are really very important when you're raising young children that makes your job as raising teenagers easier. One would be, don't make your child your friend. Don't call them buddy, champ, friend, because that really confuses them. And it confuses them at a young age. And you just don't want to go into the meat of adolescence and then teenager land with this idea where they think you're friends. It's not only okay, it's safe, and it's important that you establish who the parent is. And that doesn't mean that you are out of integrity or doing things that are out of, not being having dignity. In fact, this is the most dignified way because you have stewardship over them. You're not their friend. The child has come to you, and you have accepted the stewardship of parenthood, and that means you teach them. So it doesn't mean you're equals. It doesn't mean you're friends. That also doesn't mean you're a dictator. It means you understand authority and you understand what it means to guide a child and you understand what it means to sort of be in the space of having this sacred stewardship. So I want to, I again really reiterate, don't make your child a friend, especially when they're young. What happens when you have a 6-year-old that's your friend and then a 9-year-old that still thinks they're your friend and can't understand this, why you're fighting all the time. Then you've got a 13-year-old that thinks you're friends and it does not end well. You will have more power struggles because you tried to be too nice than you will if you just hold your ground and help yourself and your children and your partner remember who's in charge. So one of the biggest reasons with that is, as they develop, they don't have the developmental capacity to understand this relationship on a friendship space. So they are really looking to you to lead them. So as you're leading them, you're leading them through these 3-year cycles that we've talked about before. There's the changes at 3 and at 6 and at 9, and we've talked about those extensively. So if you need those, go back to watch some of our other videos. But there are also these changes at 12, 15, and 18 that are about independence, that are about really trying to seek and find their way. There's a huge difference between a child of 15 and one of 18, and then another really big leap between the child of 18 and the one of 21. So, as we're sort of going into the space, especially if it's your first child as a teen, be very careful to not put too much responsibility on that 18-year-old. Enough for sure, but you want to be able to see that they have the space of growth. So our adult children are 23, almost 21, and 18. And my goodness, even though they're all adults, they're at such vastly different places in their development. And it's very easy to see now. In fact, I would say now, if I look at them now, their developmental stages are so easy to see. It's almost like when they were 3, 5, and 9 or 3, 5, and 7, because there at 3, 5, and 7, you can really see these stages very marked out, and I can see them again now. And those changes as they are adults become changes in that, their own personal values. They've lived a little, like my oldest son, he's lived on his own for a few years and he understands the value of money. He values his time. Then my son, that's almost 21, he is seeing the space of, hey, wait a minute, I don't love everything. I love my parents, but I don't love living under the roof. So he and my ex-husband have had some fun and interesting struggles there. And then our adult daughter, she's in this space of like trying to conquer the world. So they're in very different spaces, and they'll continue that. When you're looking at the child of 12 and 15 and those years in between, what happens today, and again, we didn't have this when we were kids, is what happens today is we have this deluge of media. And, the question comes, when should they have their first smartphone? What is okay for them to have access to? What, oh no, my child got into porn. Those sorts of things. So, again, you want to have these conversations with your partner before they're at your doorstep. So often parents come to us and ask, what's the appropriate time for a child's first smartphone? It's such a personal question. Some parents, especially parents in the Waldorf world, are thinking, no, this is too early. We're talking about the child of 12 up. So in our house, our bigger kids had a phone, But it was because they went back and forth between our house and my ex's house, and they needed the opportunity to be able to get a hold of us. So I think if you have a child that is in that situation, or one that does a lot of school or other things away, you might consider having an extra phone. And it doesn't have to be a smartphone, but some kind of phone so that they can get in communication with you. So with Super Sam, who is, he's almost 14, we had an extra phone, same situation, and he just took that when he went on outings, when he went on church outings or went with friends, someplace so that he always had a phone. Because you know what's interesting? When we were kids too, phone booths actually had phones in them. There are no phone booths today. Like I was having this conversation with myself the other day. I was thinking about all of the places that, because I remember calling my mom and checking in very regularly when I was this age, this 12 to say 15 age. And so I was trying to recount in my mind all the places that I would go that I knew they had a phone booth, because she would say, okay, I want you to check in at 1, or okay, I want you to check in at 4. And so I can remember, I always had to make sure I had a watch. And I can remember having penny loafers that had, this dates me, that had dimes in them, because the phone cost 10 cents at first. Then, I remember at some point in those preteen years, they went up to a quarter. Do you remember when that was, Daddy, when they went to a quarter? Seems like we were preteens or so, or teens, early teens, when they went to a quarter. And then I couldn't fit them in my penny loafers anymore. Had to make sure that I had them in my change purse. But I would stop, and I would have to go to a telephone booth and call just to check in with her. And so I was sort of reflecting on that when I was thinking about preparing for this call. That ability to do that isn't available today. I was trying to think of the last time I actually saw a public payphone, and we live in a big metropolitan city, and I don't know where there are ones. There's none that I can remember seeing. I don't even know when the last time was that I saw a phone booth. So it's very interesting to me how, and I'm sure that sort of gradually happened over the last 20 or so years, but our children that want to have the same, sort of freedoms that we did as those early teens, they have a it's a lot more complicated. So we sort of had this extra phone that we allowed Sam to have when he went out. Now that he's almost 14, he has it more and more. But I want to say with that, we sort of have been on the Android or Apple thing back and forth. And one of the nice things, this extra phone that we have was an Apple phone, is that we can track everything. Every text that he gets, everything that he searches on his web browser, everything can be tracked on Eric's computer. And I know that sounds extreme at first, but it's not extreme. And it's not about trust. It's about safety. So if you are not to this place yet, or you're thinking, oh, we've got to go into this space now, discuss safety. So when we have these conversations with Sam, we say it's not that we don't trust you, but it's about you being safe, because he can, he likes to go to YouTube and watch some videos, and he likes to comment on some of those videos. It's very easy for those people to be back to him. We've not allowed social media other than things like YouTube. But I know parents that have, and listen, it's a personal decision. There was a mom just the other day that's a good friend of ours. Hadn't talked to her for years, and I had noticed a story that she had posted on Facebook about her daughter, who somebody had noticed, like a close family friend, had noticed that there was somebody that was kind of looking creepy on her friends list. And so my friend was like, "Oh no, how did I miss that?" But then she blocked and unfriended, and then they watched. And the first day, the man had seven friends that were all young girls. And 2 days later, he had 70 friends that were all young girls. So we have to be very diligent. People have access to our children like that, like so fast, so fast. Private accounts are not as private as we think they are. They're not. You can still message private accounts, some private accounts, especially on Instagram. Instagram probably scares me more than Facebook ever could. You know, I've been reading and trying to be diligent as a mom and as a leader in the community on, you know, what are the kids able to get into? And it's more what people can get from them. You know, they post a picture and some scary, creepy person hops into their DMs really fast. I was, you know, reading an article the other day and, you know, it went from, hey, you're beautiful, to pictures of their body parts in 3 messages. And so I'm not wanting to scare you, but I am wanting to scare you into knowing what your kids are doing online. I know that our older boys didn't have the struggle, but our daughter, our adult daughter, she did have the struggle. She had people coming at her from all directions and we knew nothing. We didn't know. We had parental protection on her phone, but we still didn't have the access that we have now with Sam's. And if I could go back and do anything, I would make sure that we have that same access. And again, it's not because we don't trust them. It's because it's for their safety. So with that, what do you do when that boundary's been crossed, or maybe they've accessed porn accidentally, which I love that accidentally, somehow on their device? And what conversations do you have about that? Now, truly, those conversations should have started when they were younger and you talked about the sanctity of their body and the sacredness of their body. So if you've not had those conversations, you should have them. You should know, you and your partner should have discussed, what do you believe about sex before marriage, porn, all of those things? Like, what do you believe about what you think is normal and acceptable versus what goes down a wrong path? So what do you believe together about that so that you can take that set of values to your children? Those values are going to be different for everybody. We teach our children from the time that they're very young that their bodies are sacred and that it's totally acceptable to be curious about your body. But we also talk about how porn is a very skewed view of sexuality, a very skewed view. And even though you'll have, you know, studies say, oh, what, everybody sees it and it's quote unquote normal, to it completely messes with people's sexual life. I'm more on the it completely messes with people's sexual life because it gives a very skewed idea of what normal sexuality is, of what normal intimacy is. So we want to be very forthright about that with our children. And when they have stepped into that, we want to just talk, we want to love them, we want to accept them, and we want to allow them to, maybe it's embarrassing when they're caught, but we want to sort of encircle them and let them know that we love them and that we're going to help them not go down that trap. And so what were the habits that led to that? Was it they had their phone in their room? We have a no phone in the bathrooms rule. We have no phone in your bedroom rule. And so, you know, you want to have these kinds of rules set up. If you have them set up beforehand, they will not be hard to enforce. If you waffle on them, they will be hard to enforce. So the next thing I want to talk about, and maybe I should have talked about this first, but I think that they're all important pieces. Media. What, when, how much? You know, if you've raised your children on low media, like we have, there comes a time when they're, and it's usually in this like 12 and up stage, when they are starting to see the whole world and they're going to push back at you. They're going to push back. Hey, I'm too big for Dinosaur Train. Don't want to watch that anymore. I don't want to watch any of those baby shows. I want to watch, I don't know, Stranger Things. I want to watch, you know, they want to watch something different. They want to have that space. They want to explore media. So you need to have this conversation again with your partner about what you think is okay and when. We have had, always, Eric and I have always had the, well, let us watch it first and then we'll discuss. and see what happens. And, you know, for many years, we're big Marvel superhero fans here and big Star Wars fans here, but it wasn't until Sam turned 12 that we allowed him to go see a movie that was PG-13. And actually, it wasn't until he turned 13 that we allowed him to go see one of those superhero movies without us seeing it first. And I know that sounds really kind of crazy to some people, because I know people that are taking their 7 and 8 year olds, and I go to those movies and I'm like, oh, why are these little kids here? Because you can't possibly understand all the things that are going on. So you know, we're really careful about that. And we've been very pleased with how that's worked for us. Now, when it comes to other things, like Sam really wanted to watch Stranger Things. His older siblings had been into it. And you know, the 13 is kind of that space of, oh, I'm kind of edgy. Kind of want to be on the edge just a little bit. I don't want to be so safe. So we let him watch the first couple of seasons, minus a couple of episodes. And then as a family, we not as a family, because not Soraya, but the old Eric and I and Sam started watching it in the evenings. And then there was one night that I had just had that it was like the spirit said to me, y'all shouldn't be watching this. And I was like, oh, all right. So I excused myself and I told Eric and Sam, y'all, you can finish watching if you want. I'm just feeling like this is pulling me too far away from the happy place I want to be. And then they all stopped. It wasn't because I said so, but I want to be really careful with what goes into our minds, whether it's for recreation, for fun, for research purposes, whatever. What are we planting in our minds? And I'm super careful as an adult what I plant in my mind. I wasn't for a lot of years, but I definitely think for the last 12 years especially, I'm super careful. There are movies that look great to me that look like a lot of fun, but if I read the parent's guide and it's rated R and it's not even about a like it's not about a church thing or anything like that, if it's rated R and it's really goes deep into something dark, I won't go, because I don't want that planted in my mind. And so we've taken that value and also given that to our children of, you want to be really careful. You want to be careful what you put in there, because once it's in here, it can't come out. You can't unsee it. So we have those conversations with our kids about, like, what is it that you are encountering when you're encountering media? So have those conversations together with your partner, have them with your children. It is easier to go a little bit at a time than it is to let them go whole hog and then have to rein it back in. I would say that you want to allow some fun stuff. So I had a fun mom who I love dearly, and if she's watching, she's gonna go, oh my gosh, that was me. She had sent me an email when her son was about 12, 13. She's like, he just wants to watch Doctor Who, and I don't know how much is appropriate. And I said, well, how much is he watching? She's like, one. And I'm like, one a day? She was like, one a week. And I'm like, oh no, you need to let him watch more than one a week. So you want to have a good balance. You don't want to dive all into media of, oh my gosh, we haven't had any and now we're going to have all of it. But you definitely want to sort of allow them to have some fun. The same, in my opinion, is with video games. Be very careful. There are definitely games that are much more addictive than others. And I could give you like a whole 30-minute objection about why I think Minecraft is a bad idea, or games like that, and Fortnite or anything like that. But I don't want to cast judgment on anybody. I'm giving you my opinion for myself and what we've seen in our family. So if you have a child that has addictive issues, behavior issues that come from gameplay, do some research. Like, there's nothing wrong with typing in addictive nature of Fortnite, addictive nature of, so that you can read what other parents have seen, and then put proper boundaries in place for your children. Okay, I say the best for last. Let's talk about dating. So when is it okay to do the whole boyfriend girlfriend thing, and have you had that conversation? So, excuse me, we have always felt like dating is practice for marriage. And you might be like, oh, Melissa, you're so old school. But I am. Because this whole coupling up process, it's practice for something, right? So we want to be careful about how attached we allow them to get to another human being when they're young. And I don't want to say that in like, I mean, everybody needs to learn. Everybody needs to have their heart broken once or twice before they get married. Yes, for sure. But I don't think that needs to happen when they're 13 or younger. I also don't know that it needs to happen when they're 14. I think it is very hard, especially in today's world, this whole soup of self-image and so much more skewed than it has ever been. We have to work really hard to keep their self-image in a good place. They have to work very hard. So it's not just your responsibility. It's their responsibility too. It's not so many parents just take it all on themselves. No, it's their responsibility too. We need to be instilling in them, your happiness is your responsibility. I can help you with that, but I can't do it for you. So don't try, because that sort of sets them up. It's kind of like calling a buddy. Sets them up in a place that they think that it's okay to have somebody else make them happy all the time. So you want to put them in situations where they can find happiness. And of course, you know, I could have a conversation about teens and temperament. And maybe that's a whole other video, because I could go on and on and on about that. Different temperaments are going to have different struggles in the teenage years. Your more melancholy temperaments are going to struggle more with self-image, I think, than others. Your choleric temperaments are going to struggle more with just like the righteous indignation of everything and just being angry. And your phlegmatics are going to be like, those are your typical teens that want to sleep all day. So that's like a small snapshot, but we'll plan a longer teen temperament video later. But I do want to say this piece about dating. You want to ask yourself, yeah, because it's kind of cute. Oh, he's got his first crush, right? It's cute, but you want to be really careful about where that goes. What is it that you're wanting to set up? How much alone time are you thinking you're going to have? Don't think, especially if you're a homeschooler, don't think they're not thinking about sex when they're 13, 14 years old and they want to be alone. Don't think they're not thinking about it. Even though you've had 15,000 conversations about it, don't think they're not thinking about it, especially if you put them in the spot of having alone time with somebody else that makes them excited and gives them that rush. So don't put them in that spot. Save that spot for when it's appropriate. You know, 15, 16 years old, for sure. 17 years old, that's the appropriate time. But not too soon, not too early. It's okay for them to have close friends, friends that are family friends. Don't let them spend a lot of time alone together. Jealously guard their childhood. Jealously guard their early teen years. Talk, be open in communication. One thing that helped us a lot with all of our big kids is when they are about, when they are this teen space, I pray with just them at night. It helps them a lot. It helps them know how much I care and bonded to them. So I want to say, I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope this was informative and helpful, and I will see y'all later.